And when Santa saw this, he hired 8 of the prettiest on the spot, Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Donder, and Blitzen, they're called, as you know, and they've been with Santa ever since. No gasoline problems there either. In the last few years, Rudolph has been added to the team, but he's really an extra, used only in emergencies, especially those caused by bad weather. Because of other objects traveling through space in recent years, Santa has acquired another helper, a reindeer whose duty it is to get the Christmas sleigh into orbit on time. Of course, Santa is a far more experienced space traveler than any man-made satellite, and he solved the problem of re-entry many years before the scientist. But to assure a smooth journey, he has assigned to Otto, the alarm clock reindeer, the job of executing the countdown. Santa views the fad in space travel with mixed emotions. He has only the kindest wishes for the astronauts and the cosmonauts, but sometimes he's tempted to give the Russians a taste of their own medicine by telling them it was he who invented space flight. We've been unable to verify reports that Santa sometimes switches to a camel in the hot countries, such as Africa, but rumor has it that he was once seen crossing the Atlantic on a whale when all of his reindeer had overindulged on tundra herbs and all were ill. He has been known on occasion to try out a more modern means of transportation, such as the helicopter. But he really hasn't any need for such gadgets because his reindeer are more agile than any mechanical invention. How Santa managed to train them to travel at such high speed and through the air is a trade secret. Santa, in fact, is known for his ingenuity, and he has many such trade secrets. Did you ever stop to wonder, for instance, how he manages to get back up the chimney? Or, for that matter, how such a portly gentleman manages to get down? And then there are those gift bags which seem to hold a limitless supply of packages. But unfortunately, these are matters which Santa refuses to discuss, for fear his scientific discoveries will fall into unscrupulous hands. And incidentally, in case you've wondered why he chose to live in such a cold climate, you must admit the polar regions are, in some ways, ideal for business enterprise. For the most part, at the North Pole, Santa can work undisturbed, and it's one of the few areas of the world where, so far at least, he has been able to maintain his international status. But of course, that doesn't make Santa a man without a country. He's a citizen of every nation in the world and is loved by all. Mrs. Claus has been known to complain that her husband works so hard she has trouble timing his dinners. But from the looks of him, Santa hasn't missed many meals in his adult life. And Mrs. Claus, like most good wives, shares his professional interests. Often she helps out in the toy factory, particularly during the Christmas rush, and she's usually cataloging the mountains of mail Santa receives through the courtesy of the world postal departments. And there are other helpers as well, little elves and brownies whose laughter tinkles like the tiny bells on their caps. They help sort the mail and make the toys, and they never give Santa any strike trouble. They have a lifelong contract with the children of the world. They whistle while they work because theirs is a song of happiness. Santa's line of goods is determined largely by the requests he receives in letters, although he always carries standard items such as dolls and trains. However, it must be said that Santa's been a bit concerned in the past about all the toy guns, tanks, planes, and battleships that youngsters were asking for, and he's delighted that this year electric trains are far and away the most popular. And how he wishes that all such things as guns remain only toys as long as people live, and perhaps someday children of all ages might outgrow them for good. He spends 11 months of the year manufacturing toys, but in December he starts making plans for deliveries. By the way, contrary to popular belief, he doesn't do all delivering of gifts on Christmas Eve. To make the job a bit lighter, he brings his gifts to the children of some nations on December 6th, the Feast of St. Nicholas. That day happens to be Santa's birthday, and as is often the case in Europe, he was named after the saint of whose feast day he was born. Santa Claus, you see, is an abbreviation for St. Nicholas, and this may have had a good deal of influence on Santa, because he naturally learned all about the saint, a very good man who had a special love for children. Since we all get a chance to see Santa at least once a year, it may seem somewhat redundant to describe him now, but it's interesting to note that he's made modifications in his clothing over the years. When Clement Moore met him on a certain night before Christmas many years ago, he was dressed in fur from his head to his toes. But unlike many other men of distinction, his continuing success has made him less conservative, if anything. And now he usually wears a red flannel suit with ermine trimming to match his long white beard. Despite that white beard, Santa won't reveal his exact age. But we know he's nearly as old as Christmas, yet eternally young at heart. His boyish energy and constant good health astound most doctors. Staggering as his job is, no one has ever seen a worry line in Santa's forehead. Santa does a lot of laughing. When he does, his eyes twinkle, dimples appear in his fat, rosy cheeks, and as one friend put it, his little round belly shakes like a bowl full of jelly. Santa's a hard worker, but with it all, he manages to have a lot of fun, and he looks as if he gets a great kick out of living. Santa's philosophy, of course, is one we've all been taught to follow, but which not all of us do. Santa gets his greatest happiness out of making others happy. And the more he gives, the jollier he becomes. In short, he embodies the whole spirit of Christmas and the joy of giving. Offhand, you'd think everyone would welcome a man who stands for such sentiments, but although Santa has more friends than any man alive, like any man in public life, he also has his enemies. These critics daren't go so far as to contradict Santa's creed. They use a more subtle type of propaganda, skepticism. Sources close to Santa say he usually refers these skeptics to the letter written by a friend, an editor of the New York Sun, to a little girl named Virginia. Perhaps you've wondered why Santa does what he does, why he devotes his entire life, without salary, without profit, to continuing this Christmas tradition. As one of his closest advisors told me, Santa has faith in the children of the world. He knows that young minds and hearts must be encouraged to believe, to have hope for the future. Children need, as man himself needs, faith that tomorrow can be brighter and happier. Yes, Santa works without salary. He asks nothing. But he has faith that by encouraging children to be good, they will perhaps retain some of this philosophy when they grow older. The children he'll visit this Christmas will no doubt understand how Santa keeps his faith. To those of us who have grown older, this faith can be reborn if we look into the clear, bright eyes of our own children. If we look on Christmas morning, we may see the one reward that Santa hopes for. If we look, we may see how Santa's simple technique of goodwill toward men can help to bring us the one thing for which we pray: peace on earth. This is Douglas Edwards, CBS News. Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to Douglas Edwards' 27th annual report from the North Pole. This is the CBS Radio Network.
And they leave me hanging here with lots of time. 46 seconds yet, so let's run over another one of the KOIN bowl games that we're going to have in our continuing coverage of the Holiday Bowl action. Friday morning, Pittsburgh. Great team, Tony Dorsett and company, the Panthers, taking on the Jayhawks of Kansas, which didn't have a bad year themselves this year. And they're squaring off in the Sun Bowl Friday morning at 9 o'clock. That'll be heard play-by-play right here on KOIN, starting at 9 on Friday morning. Now, there will be, I was going to mention another Blazer game, and I'm just about out of time, so I won't. There will be another Blazer game Friday night here at KOIN. The Blazers will travel to Los Angeles, and that one starts at 7:40. My name's Tom Morgan. Be sure to join me tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, particularly at 9, on KOIN Portland.
CBS News. The death toll in that political uprising in Argentina now stands at 56. I'm Eric Engberg reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Leftist guerrillas attacked military installations and police outposts in and around the capital of Buenos Aires. The attacks appeared to be well coordinated, forcing the government to call out all available reserves to meet them. The government of President Isabel Perón claims that 50 of the guerrillas were killed. More after this.
Hemorrhoid sufferers, the proof is here. proof from leading doctors and hospitals of a medication that helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues caused by inflammation. It's doctor-tested, hospital-tested Preparation H. Hundreds of tests prove that in many cases, Preparation H gives prompt temporary relief of occasional pain and itch and helps shrink swollen, inflamed hemorrhoidal tissues. Preparation H, ointment or suppositories, use only as directed. Doctor-tested, hospital-tested Preparation H helps shrink swollen hemorrhoidal tissues.
I wanted more out of life than a 9-to-5 desk job. I bring health care to people in areas where the nearest hospital and doctor may be 40 miles away.
That was Ellen Peach, a nurse practitioner, telling you about her career in the health field. Do you want more out of life than a 9-to-5 job? Send for our free booklet, 200 Health Careers. Write to National Health Council, Box 40, New York, New York, 10019. A public service of this station and the Advertising Council.
Authorities in Greece are searching for the three men who killed the assistant to America's ambassador in Athens. President Ford has voiced shock on behalf of the U.S. government at the murder of Richard Welsh, shot down from ambush as he returned to his Athens home from a Christmas party. Welsh had been identified by a Greek newspaper last month as the chief Central Intelligence Agency officer in Greece. The CIA has refused to confirm or deny that this was the case. The Greek government, expressing sorrow to the U.S., said it would do everything possible to find the killers. The federal government has launched a drive to permit the sellers of eyeglasses to advertise their prices. Eye doctors and manufacturers of glasses don't advertise prices now because of state laws and industry rules. The acting chief of the Federal Trade Commission's Consumer Bureau, Joan Bernstein, explains why the commission wants the rules changed.
Existing laws and trade association rules have left consumers largely in ignorance of the comparative prices of one of their simplest and most valuable possessions, a pair of eyeglasses. There is reason to believe that prohibitions against price advertising shield sellers of this vital product from normal competitive forces and force consumers to pay inflated prices. For the poor and the elderly, these high prices can put good vision out of financial reach.
The attack on the eyeglass advertising rules came just one day after the FTC proposed rules to permit medical doctors to advertise. A conflict between Britain's National Health Service and its 19,000 hospital residents and interns may be coming to an end. Bob Dyke reports from London.
The junior doctors, mostly young, claiming they are overworked and underpaid, have been staging a partial strike for fewer hours and more money. They refused to work overtime the past month, forcing the shutdown of numerous casualty wards and hospitals throughout Britain. The Hospital Junior Staff Committee, which represents the doctors and which has been negotiating with the government, recommended an end to the overtime ban. If the committee's recommendation is accepted, Britain's junior doctors will receive some concessions from the National Health Service, and in a week or two, the nationwide emergency room crisis could be over. But the National Health Service still has another conflict to resolve, one involving Britain's specialists, many of whom are restricting their services to protest the expulsion of private patients from socialized hospitals. Bob Dyke for CBS News, London.
President Ford, beginning an eight-day vacation in Vail, Colorado, had to ski around a few rocks on his first day on the mountain because there hasn't been enough fresh snow in Vail to cover all the ski trails. Nonetheless, Mr. Ford called the skiing excellent. He was shadowed by Secret Service men on the slopes. On his way to Vail, Mr. Ford signed the compromise tax bill, which will maintain withholding taxes at current levels for the next 6 months. The rate of serious crime in America increased more slowly during the first 9 months of this year than for the comparable period last year. It was up 11% for 1975 as compared to 16% in 74. More in a moment.
Miss Parker, music teacher, how do you spell relief?
When the acid indigestion hits me, I spell relief R-O-L-A-I-B-S, Rolaids.
Butch Mitchell, dog trainer.
For dance, I spell relief R-O-L-A-I-B-S.
Rolaids spells relief. Each Rolaids consumes 47 times its weight in excess stomach acid. Officer Hess, traffic cop, how do you spell relief?
For heartburn, R-O-L-A-I-D-S.
Rolaids spells relief. Use only as directed.
Mark, what were your plans when you left high school?
I didn't have any plans.
Tony Orlando is talking to a young man who found a bright new career in technical school.
I work in a research lab building lasers.
Get a free Tony Orlando record. You can be more than you are. And the facts on how you can learn to do the work you like at technical school. Write Careers, Box 111, Washington, D.C., 20044. This was a public service announcement of this station, the U.S. Office of Education, and the Advertising Council.
Four congressmen who visited Hanoi say the North Vietnamese have promised to look harder for about 400 American servicemen still listed as missing in action. The congressmen met with North Vietnamese Premier Pham Van Dong, who said the search for the Americans would be stepped up. I'm Eric Engberg, CBS News.
In Radio 97 News, the criticisms of Pacific Northwest Bell's charge for directory assistance have come from misunderstanding the charge. That's part of the explanation for Public Utility Commissioner Charles Davis, who was denied a request to reconsider and suspend his order allowing the phone company to charge for certain directory assistance calls. Customers thought before the service was free, Davis says, but it wasn't. This is just a different method of billing, and despite what some critics think, the charge does not mean revenue for Bell Telephone, according to Davis.
Pacific Northwest Bell will not earn more money as a result of that decision. There may be better ways to provide directory assistance. There may be better ways to build telephone directories, and those questions will be examined by my staff and by Pacific Northwest Bell in the future.
Davis said his staff will investigate the first 6 months' operation of the charges. The request for the change came from the Oregon Student Public Interest Research Group, known as OSPIRG. Citizens of Vancouver will start paying more to subsidize bus service next year. The city council has voted to increase the per-month charge to each household in the city. Mayor Jim Gallagher says the fee will not be the maximum allowed by state law. Gallagher says the city council hopes that the legislature can reinstate a $60,000 state subsidy that was lost during the last legislative session in a squabble between the governor and lawmakers. One out of every 10 newborns this year was an illegitimate birth, the highest ratio in Oregon history. It's one of the vital statistics compiled by the Oregon Health Division, and there are some other surprises.
For example, the abortions for the year just ending 1975 are going to number over 10,000, nearly 11,000, and this is almost a 24% increase over 1974 when there were 8,000 and approximately 800.
The weather for the Portland metropolitan area on page 2. Rain at times tonight and Wednesday with partial clearing on Wednesday night. Cloudy and increasing chance of rain during Christmas Day. Lows will be in the upper 30s tonight, low 40s Wednesday night, and 100% chance of rain through tomorrow, 60% tomorrow night. At 11:08, you're up to the minute. With Radio 97 News, I'm Tom Morgan.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... E.G. Marshall, keeper of this little lighthouse that casts its feeble flicker into the awesome darkness all about us. This time we are concerned with time itself. Time. Elusive time. Time is never the same in two distant places, never the same for different people. For some, time goes slowly. For others, time goes quickly. Some use time, others pass it. And yet, isn't time the staff of life? Time is really all we have, because when time runs out...
But I didn't kill him.
You wanted to.
Who says so?
You were overheard. You said to him, I'll kill you.
That was... You know, sometimes you say things.
Why'd you come here with him?
Because it was part of my job. I was his secretary.
Personnel office at the company has no record of your working there.
He didn't tell anyone he hired me.
Why?
Well, he didn't get a chance to. You see, I sneaked into his office. He hired me and...
Yes?
And he suddenly discovered he had to come up here to the convention. And I went with him.
If somebody were telling this story to you, would you believe it?
No, but it's true.
Our mystery drama, The Murder Market, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Rosemary Murphy.
It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division and Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser.
I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Isn't it nice to know you're free? To see the things you want to see. To touch the heights you dare to reach. To know you're all that you can be.
According to EPA results, a 1976 Buick Electra, equipped with automatic transmission and available 350 V8, delivered 14 miles per gallon in the city test and 18 in the highway test. Of course, these are only estimates. The mileage you get may vary. But what it all boils down to is this. Now, Electra isn't just a luxury car. It's a practical luxury car. In California, see your Buick dealer for EPA figures.
Who will cope with tomorrow for a brighter new day? There's one hope for tomorrow, the children of today.
There is only one hope for tomorrow, the children. Yet there are children in this world right now who have no hope for a brighter today. They're hungry, illiterate, living in misery, and when they grow up, if they grow up, they'll pass on this hopelessness. And it's the world's loss and the world's shame. You can help children to grow up with healthy bodies and educated minds, with a zest for life that they'll pass on to their children and to our world. Won't you please send a check to Save the Children Federation, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017. That's Save the Children, Box 970, Grand Central Station, New York, 10017. Think about tomorrow.
We've got to save the children and save the world. Help them to grow.
People have investments in stocks and in businesses and all sorts of enterprises. But these are investments involving money. The most important investment someone can make is the investment in another human being. Because this is an investment in time. After all, lost money can always be regained, but lost time? Our heroine's name is Theodora. Theodora Lewis. Significant might be the fact that no one has ever called her Thea or Teddy or Dora or Dory. It's always been Theodora or Miss Lewis. That's because she's such a sensible young lady.
That's the word that broke the camel's back. Sensible. It's a word I've hated all my life. And what did it ever get me? Finally, I did something about it. Something wild and crazy. Yes, me, Theodora Lewis. I had no way of knowing it would be that kind of day. It certainly started, prosaically enough, the way all my days did. Good morning, Mother.
Morning, dear. Your breakfast is ready.
I'm not hungry.
Oh, be sensible, dear. A solid breakfast is the foundation for the entire day. Is Stanley coming to dinner tonight?
No. He has to study.
Oh, poor boy. He works so hard. But it'll be worth it, you'll see.
Yes, Mother.
In just a few years, he'll have his Ph.D.
In another few years, I'll be 40.
Darling, what the two of you are doing now is difficult.
Don't worry, Mother. I'll wait for Stanley. I have to. There isn't anyone else around who wants me.
Theodora, what a thing to say. You're in love with Stanley.
Yes, Mother, I was only joking.
Well, never do it again.
Do what?
Tell jokes.
Why not?
Men don't like it. All this women's lib to the contrary, notwithstanding.
Now, Mother.
Femininity is a fragile essence that a woman must carefully preserve.
I understand. And I've preserved mine for 36 years. Stanley worked in a bank. I had a job in an insurance office nearby. At noon, we'd meet in the park for lunch.
Each of us brought a sandwich from home. Well, it was sensible. Stanley estimated that between us, we saved over $20 a week that way. Our savings went into our joint bank account. We already had enough for the down payment on a house.
Well, at this rate, by the end of the year, we'll have enough for the furniture.
Stanley.
Yes, Theodora?
On our itemized list, I notice a down payment fund, a furniture fund, a contingency fund.
We have to have one. Suppose one of us gets sick.
Shouldn't we also have a separate fund for a honeymoon?
A honeymoon?
Well, shouldn't we go on a trip?
Oh. Well, actually, if we did take some time off from our jobs...
Yes?
We should put that time to very good use.
How?
Make the new house shipshape. Well, I could do the painting, and you could do the planting, and...
But aren't we entitled to a honeymoon, even a small one?
Oh, yeah, right. After the ceremony, we should go to Atlantic City for a day or two, and then come back and get started on the house. Hey, it's 5 to 1. We'd better be going back to our jobs. See you tomorrow, darling.
Call me tonight, Stanley.
Listen, I just had this thought. It isn't as if we don't see each other every day, huh? And it's late night call. Well, it's 17 cents a night, and over the year, that adds up to...
Oh, Stanley.
Forget it, darling. Sure. We are entitled to a few luxuries.
We said goodbye to each other, and I started back toward my office. A little boy who was chasing a big yellow and red ball ran into me. He was about 4 years old, but very well-mannered. He apologized with a shy smile. He had the bluest eyes I ever saw. I looked at the sky and noticed a perfect match. And looking at the sky and the bright sun and the green, green grass, I said to myself, why do I have to rush back to that stuffy office? In 15 years, I've never been as much as 15 minutes late. I would just enjoy this day for a little while. If they didn't like it... Well, if they didn't like it...
You do talk to yourself a lot, girl. That's a fact.
I beg your pardon.
You want to be late to your office? Well, go ahead and be late.
Are you a mind reader?
No, I'm a lip reader. You mean after 15 years, they'd fire you if you walked in late just one time?
No, they wouldn't do that, but they wouldn't like it.
What do you do?
I'm a secretary in an insurance company.
Who?
Bailey and Witherspoon.
Do you have to work for a living?
I have to support myself and my mother. She's been a widow for over a...
Yeah, see how lonely and insecure you are.
What did you say?
Here I am, a perfect stranger. If I ask you two or three more questions, you'll be ready to pour out the story of your life. Where are you going?
Let go of my arm, please.
Well, it would be better for you if you listened to me.
That's a police officer just down the end of the path.
What about it?
What about it? I'm going to...
You're going to do nothing, and you know it. You see, you're even too timid to call for help. You're afraid there might be publicity, something in the morning paper... An item in tonight's newscast. And somehow it might even be interpreted as your fault. After all, I'm a very dignified old gentleman.
Oh, please, let go of my arm.
Will you stay?
I'll stay.
All right. Let's get back to your job. You worked there 15 years. You must be pretty good.
How would you know?
Well, would they have kept you if you weren't?
It so happens I am very good.
The only reason I spoke to you in the first place is that you remind me of a girl I used to know.
Oh, I see.
What do you think you see?
The prologue to a proposition.
Oh, don't be cavalier about propositions, girl. How many of them did you ever get in your life, anyway?
You'd be surprised.
Don't play woman of the world with me. I know you too well.
How would you know me? You only started talking to me a minute ago.
I come here every day. I see you sitting on the bench with him. I say him because he dresses like a man. Although personally, I doubt it.
Stanley is the finest man I know.
Then you're in a bad way. Why does he sit here and munch peanut butter sandwiches? Why didn't he take you out to lunch?
Because we can't afford it.
When I said you reminded me of a girl, that wasn't the start of a proposition.
What was it?
Oh, just an old man's nostalgia. But now I see you're not like her at all. Well, on the surface, perhaps, but... you don't have her fire. Her ambition.
Who was this girl?
Oh, somebody I knew. Almost 50 years ago. Doesn't matter now. Well, it's costing me too much money just to sit here in the sun. My girl. It's hidden.
What's hidden?
It's hidden under a layer of fear and lack of confidence, but I think you got the basic stuff. Go out. Do something with your life. Before it's too late.
Darling, put the paper down. You'll be late to work. Theodora, I'm talking to you.
Yes, Mother.
You know how annoyed they are at the office when you're not on time.
Yes, Mother.
What are you staring at?
This picture. Look.
Well, that's J.P. Carson. I've heard of him.
Everybody's heard of J.P. Carson.
Got a finger in almost everything. It says he's acquired another company.
So that man was J.P. Carson himself.
Which man?
The man I met.
You met J.P. Carson? Where? When?
Yesterday, on a park bench.
What would J.P. Carson be doing on a park bench? Better run along, dear.
I wonder if he'd remember me. All the way downtown on the crowded bus, I kept trying not to think about it. I even refused to face what it was. I got up at my stop, as usual, went up to my office, as usual. And maybe I wasn't concentrating on my work, but Mr. Peterson came by and warned me about being careful. And his tone of voice was even nastier than usual. And before I knew it, I was on my feet and I was looking down at this mean, vicious little man. And was this me? Was I actually saying, Mr. Peterson, I have put up with you and your nasty temper for more years than I care to remember. Take your frustrations out on someone else. I shall no longer pay the price for all your personal inadequacies. I quit.
I'll be...
You'll be what?
How'd you get in here?
I got off the elevator. The receptionist was busy, so I just sneaked by her.
Ah. We must never tell her. It'll break her heart.
Then I stopped a girl. I said I was new here. Where's the boss's office? She told me.
And?
I want a job.
You got a job?
I quit.
Well, after 15 years? Why did you want to work for me?
Because you make me feel I'm somebody. I can learn from you. And I'm a good secretary. Will you give me a job?
I have two secretaries now, and they complain about overwork. Answer the phone. You're working.
Oh, Mr. Carson.
Answer the phone.
Mr. Carson's office.
Is he in? This is Al Ferris.
Are you in for Mr. Al Ferris?
Ask him what he wants.
Mr. Carson would like to know what you want.
You tell that bandit. You tell Mr. Carson that I'm going to kill him.
He says he's going to kill you.
You tell him he's not man enough.
Mr. Carson says you're not... Mr. Carson says, don't be silly.
Yeah, you'd better believe it. And Carson had better believe it, and the whole world had better believe it. Before Carson drives me to ruin and disgrace, I'm going to kill him.
How's the new job? The first time she answers the phone, did you hear what happened? What kind of operator is this J.P. Carson, anyhow? Maybe Theodora will hope she was back in the insurance office when I return to you with Act Two in just a few moments.
When you say that, you've said a lot of things nobody else can say.
A lot of things, like Beechwood aging for 100% natural carbonation. That's how the Budweiser people age their beer. Nobody else does it that special way. But then, nobody else is brewing the king of beers. I could tell you a lot of other things about Budweiser and why it's the largest selling beer in the world. But it all comes back to the Budweiser taste, and that speaks for itself. Loud and clear. Hear it talking?
There is no other one. There's only something left. Because the king of beer.
You've said it.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
When a storm's been brewing, whose weather bureau helps your weather bureau give you an early warning?
Who got all of the world's pilots and control towers to speak English so you can land safely no matter where you fly?
Who's just about wiped out smallpox so your kids may never need a vaccination? And who set the standards of purity on the imported food you eat?
Who helps you in dozens of ways you never dreamed of? The United Nations. Find out what the UN's been doing to help you.
Send for the free UN booklet. Write United Nations Association, Box 475, New York 10017. That's United Nations Association, Box 475, New York 10017. There's always been a you in the UN, a public service of this station and the Advertising Council.
We're told that certain primitive tribes taught their children to swim by tossing them into the water. In this manner, they developed some excellent swimmers. They also lost quite a few kids. However, there are those people who deliberately provoke a sink-or-swim situation. For example, our heroine, Miss Theodora Lewis.
Did you hear what I said?
Yes, Mr. Ferris.
You tell Carson. You tell him I intend to kill him.
Hand me that phone. Ferris.
Listen, Carson.
Now, you listen.
Don't force
me. I'm ready for you, Ferris. Instead of weeping bitter tears, you should be out raising the money.
But, Mr. Carson...
Oh, if I had a dollar for every threat on my life, I'd have retired 20 years ago. What's your name?
Theodora Lewis.
Oh. I knew a girl named Theodora once. I met her in Shanghai, 1934, when I was with the Marines. She said she was a Russian princess. That's another story. Now, I have a business meeting at the Lake Forest Resort Hotel in New Hampshire. I have to straighten some people out. What time is it?
10 o'clock.
Now, you'll have to rush. Take a cab home, pack enough things for 4 or 5 days, and be at the airport in time for a 12:30 takeoff.
But, Mr. Carson...
You'll see a sign that says Private Aviation. Ask for my plane.
You mean you want me to go with you?
Well, you're my secretary, aren't you?
But it's such short notice.
When you work for me, you're on the alert 24 hours a day.
But I'll have to meet my fiancé at noon.
What, in the park? For lunch? I'm going to break that up as the last thing I ever do. Take a tennis racket and some swimsuits, and a dinner is always formal.
I can borrow a dress.
No, you can't. You buy something up there and put it on your expense account. I can't afford to have a secretary with a hand-me-down look. Well, don't just stand there. We don't have all day.
What do you mean you're going up to New Hampshire? Mother, I don't have time to go into it. Let me have your suitcase.
Well, what will Stanley say?
I'll call him at the bank.
Theodora, you know how they frown on personal calls.
Then you'll have to go down to the park at noon and explain.
Explain what? Theodora, I strongly disapprove, and I suspect Stanley will, too. You had such a good, secure job, and this man Carson, he's notorious. He's always involved in a lawsuit.
Mother, I only have one life, and if I wait too long, I'll never get a chance to live it.
Theodora, you used to be so sensible. What's gotten into you?
I don't know, Mother, but it's wonderful. I thought it was a dream at first. Only yesterday, I had been bored with my life. And today, I had an exciting, thrilling new job. Suddenly, I was staying at the kind of luxurious resort I had only seen in the movies.
In my briefcase, you'll find a folder marked United Merchandising. You got it?
Yes.
Type up copies of all the papers in the folder. Do it in your room in the morning before breakfast, and then you can have the rest of the day off. I'll be in a meeting most of the time.
Is there anything else?
Well, that's enough for one day and one night. Oh, that's a pretty dress. You do have good taste. Pity Stanley can't appreciate it.
Mr. Carson, I'll thank you not to discuss my personal affairs.
I like that shade of red. Matches your hair. Now, there's some very interesting, unattached men you can meet up here.
Mr. Carson, I happen to be engaged.
Yeah, I know. To, what's his name? Stanley. Please, how could you even consider him?
Mr. Carson, I must...
Oh, be quiet. Why do you think I brought you here? Because I figured you could do yourself some good.
Good?
Come in.
Carson... I have to talk to you.
See me tomorrow, Ferris.
Now, look, tomorrow's too late. I'll be frozen out.
You should have thought of that before.
J.P., let's make a deal.
Don't make me laugh.
You'll regret it.
Please, close the door gently on your way out.
Won't you give me a break?
Were you out to give me a break?
I don't have the money.
You know how to raise it.
All right. I warned you.
Trouble with you, Al, is you don't know how to lose.
And the trouble with you, J.P., you don't know how to win.
That was the same Mr. Ferris who called you at the office?
Oh, yes. Al Ferris.
He looks desperate.
They all do.
All?
They all get over it. See you at breakfast.
Good night, Mr. Carson.
Now, wait a minute. Check the folder and see if you have a paper marked options.
Options? No, I don't see it.
Well, I must have forgotten to place them in the folder. Look through the briefcase.
Yes, sir. Here it is. It says options.
Good. Put it in the folder. And now, tell me what's wrong.
Wrong?
Yes. What's wrong?
Nothing.
You'll have to learn to lie better than that. Especially if you want to get along in this world. Well?
Why do you carry a gun in your briefcase?
My dear Theodora... You obviously refer to my .45 caliber Colt automatic pistol.
Whatever it is.
I never know when I might need one.
Have you ever needed one?
On occasion.
I never knew anybody who carried a gun around with him. I mean, except policemen.
Well, I play a rough game for high stakes.
You talk about a game and rough. Those men who are here... They look like wealthy, important business leaders.
Well, it's all a game. And in games, you have winners and losers. Some people lose hard. They say things like Al Ferris did.
But
none of these characters has the guts to follow through. I expect to die of a very ripe old age. Actually, I'm going to fall off the tree. You got that option paper?
Yes, sir. Right here in the folder.
Guard it with your life.
I will, sir.
Actually, you might take the .45.
Me? I wouldn't even know how to hold it.
So you sneak around with me and you might have to learn.
Besides, I am morally opposed.
You get that from Stanley?
Mr. Carson, I want one thing understood.
Yes?
I love Stanley.
I doubt it.
You may not approve of him, but you don't have the right to...
That's where you're wrong. I can't have a secretary whose life is being ruined by some anemic imitation of a man.
Stanley is kind and considerate and sincere.
You're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
I hate you.
I inspire that emotion in people. All right, getting back to Stanley.
Don't you say another word about Stanley. You make me so mad, I could kill you.
All right, close the door gently.
I beg your pardon. No, it was my fault. I should have watched where I was going.
I was just sweeping the hall. Excuse me.
It's all right.
Hey, listen. You look like a nice lady. Can I give you a word of advice?
About what?
I'm an expert. Because I also married a guy more than twice my age. Never fight with him. They can get a heart attack.
Oh, we're not married.
Oh, you're not married. Okay. Well,
at least take the old buzzard for all he's got.
Oh, no, it's nothing like that.
Yeah? Nothing like what?
Like you know what? I'm just his secretary.
Oh, sure.
I mean it.
And that conversation I just overheard, that didn't exactly sound like a business talk between a man and his secretary.
If you'll excuse me.
Well, I'm just trying to do you a good turn. Listen a little better here. I bet I am. You look kind of new at this.
New at what?
Ain't going to be this fresh-looking and pretty forever.
I don't have the faintest idea
of
what...
Go home. Marry that nice guy. Bet his name is Stanley.
Stanley? How do you know about Stanley?
What's the matter? I never went to the movies. I never seen the story before.
What story?
Your story. You want to do something for your guy, Stanley. So you figure you'll go away for the weekend with his boss.
That's the most ridiculous...
I heard the whole thing. You were telling him all about Stanley, and he laughed at you. And that got you so mad, you said you'd kill him. Now, do you deny that?
I don't know why I'm standing here listening to you.
I'm only saying this because I'm a little older than you. I'd like to help you straighten you out. Don't kill him.
But I have no intention...
Don't. You can't get away with it. And second, Stanley has got to stand up on his own two feet. Do you know what I mean?
Thank you for your advice, even though none of it was necessary. I was amused. I was more. I was even flattered to think that I, Theodora Lewis, could be mistaken for a seductive woman of the world, the kind who went away with rich men for weekends.
Hello.
Oh, it's Mr. Ferris.
You're Carson's secretary.
Yes.
New, aren't you?
Very new.
Well, then let me buy you a drink.
Thank you. I don't drink.
Well, you have to drink something.
Well, I...
Let's just step into the bar.
But I...
It could be worth your while.
What did you wish to talk about, Mr. Ferris?
You're his secretary.
We've established that.
Well, you know all the papers he has with him up here.
Where is this leading us, Mr. Ferris?
I'd like to have a certain paper that's in his possession right now.
Why don't you ask him for it?
Oh, I know what his answer would be.
Then you know what my answer must be.
I'll give you $5,000 for it.
Good night, Mr. Ferris.
Miss Lewis, don't force me to do something desperate.
In your entire life? I, who had never experienced even the slightest semblance of intrigue, was now just about immersed in it. And don't think I wasn't enjoying every single second of it. Well, I finally fell asleep. I had a very strange dream. Although none of it was as startling as reality or the reality of the past 12 hours. It seemed my dream was interrupted by a loud explosion. And did I wake up? I don't know. But I became conscious of a loud, insistent knocking. And now I was wide awake. It was still dark outside, but I thought perhaps, well, it was Mr. Carson. Some important emergency. No rest for the weary on this job. I slipped into my robe. Just a minute. Oh,
Miss Theodora Lewis?
Yes. What are you staring at?
Well, I guess I'm staring at you. May I come in?
Why?
Oh, my name is Frank Harmon. I'm the sheriff.
The sheriff?
Yes, the sheriff of this county.
Well, come in, I suppose. Is something wrong?
Oh, yes, yes. There's been a murder.
A murder? Who?
Mr. Carson.
Mr. Carson? No, it can't be true.
He was found shot to death about an hour ago.
Oh, that's terrible. Do you know who did it?
Well, we have a prime suspect.
Who?
You.
Talk about
what we gave you in rapid succession. She meets Mr. Carson on a park bench. She gets a job as his secretary. She is accused of being his mistress, and now of being his murderer. How much deeper can she fall? For that, you must wait for Act Three, which I shall bring you in just a few moments.
Me? What's up, Doc?
Hi, I'm Mel Blanc, and that's just one of a thousand voices I do. That's why they asked me to tell you about Lemon Mint Listerine Lozenges.
They really soothe your throat when you have a cold.
And Listerine's anesthetic medicine helps give fast,
beep, beep,
temporary relief from minor sore throat pain. Lemon Mint Listerine Lozenges. No matter how many voices you've got, you've only got one throat.
So get Listerine Lozenges, folks.
Use only as directed.
I tied strings around my finger, written notes to myself. This is Dennis Weaver, and I guess I've tried them all. And every once in a while, I find that I've forgotten in spite of all the reminders. I hope that doesn't happen to your Christmas seal letter. You see, the things Christmas seals do for us must go on all year round. That's the fight against such lung diseases as emphysema, asthma, and tuberculosis. Please give more to Christmas seals.
Your lung association says it's a matter of life and breath.
Share a ride with a friend. Share a smile when you're round the bend. Let somebody brighten up your day.
Share a ride with a friend. Drive together and the time you spend will speed along as you go your way.
Double up every morning. Double up for the morning at night. Double up every day. It's a better way. You gotta have more fun together.
Talking about the latest style. We pass away the mile. Glad that I'm not driving home alone.
Talking about the game last night. A guy made a play that was out of sight. It's nice to talk to someone going home.
Double up every morning. Double up going home at night. Double up every day. It's a better way. We're gonna have more fun together.
Driving alone.
A public service of this station, U.S. Department of Transportation, and the Advertising Council. All of us walk close to the brink, and most of us are unaware of it. For life is usually predictable, despite the poets and philosophers. We do know what tomorrow will bring. It will bring us whatever it brought us today and yesterday. For in the main, we cling to the security of the tried and the true. It's only when we attempt to break the mold. Well, look at what happened to Theodora Lewis.
Are you accusing me of murder, Sheriff?
Well, let's say you're a prime suspect.
I would have no
When was the last time you saw Mr. Carson?
Just after dinner.
Where?
In his suite.
And you didn't shoot him?
No, of course not. Why should I have killed Mr. Carson?
Well, someone heard you threaten him.
But I never...
We have a witness.
I heard you say, you get me so mad, I could kill you.
Did you say that, Miss Lewis?
Not in that context.
But you did say, you get me so mad, I could kill you.
I was standing there right outside the door. Why don't you tell him the truth?
I am telling the truth.
The truth being that you went away with him so you could help Stanley get a promotion.
Stanley doesn't work for Mr. Carson.
All right, thank you, Betty. We can talk to you again if we need you.
You should have listened to me. Now get yourself a good lawyer.
Miss Lewis, would you mind telling us why did you come up here with Mr. Carson?
I came up here because he asked me to.
Well, that doesn't really answer the question. Why did he ask you to?
Because I was his secretary.
Oh.
That should answer the question.
Well, I'm afraid it doesn't.
Why not?
Because you were not his secretary.
He hired me.
Well, I checked with the company, and there's no record of an employee named Theodora Lewis.
He only hired me yesterday.
Well, even so, you should have been on the payroll.
Well, no, because...
Yes?
You see, I know how this is going to sound. I
I sneaked into his office without anyone seeing me, and I was hired then and there, on the spot.
Yes?
And he never had a chance to say anything about it to anyone, because 2 hours later we were headed up here, you know, on a matter of business.
Mm. You sneaked into his office?
To ask for a job.
Yes. Well, what made you do that?
We had met the day before.
Oh. Where?
On a park bench. And he told me I was wasting my life.
Yes.
Which I was, but now I wish I'd never listened to him.
Well, if you didn't kill him, who did?
Who did? Oh, I know. I know a man who had the motive and who threatened him. The murderer is Mr. Al Ferris. You threatened Mr. Carson twice. Once on the phone at his office.
Oh, that is not true.
And again this evening in his room in front of a witness.
And who's the witness?
Me.
Oh, Sheriff, I'm afraid this poor young lady is clutching at straws.
You deny that you threatened Mr. Carson?
Why would I threaten Mr. Carson?
Because he had you at a disadvantage. Some sort of business disadvantage. That's why you threatened him.
Oh, now, that is an absolute lie. J.P. Carson and I were the best of friends.
But I heard you say...
That will have to be all, Miss Lewis. You can go now, Mr. Ferris. But like everyone else, you'll have to remain here at the hotel.
Why, certainly, Sheriff. And I'm sorry, Miss Lewis.
I tell you, he killed Carson. Carson had him in a bind.
What sort of bind?
I don't know.
Well, you were his secretary. You don't know?
I told you, I just started working for him.
You just started and he took you up here?
He wanted me to meet interesting men.
Really? Why?
Because he disapproved of my fiancé.
Stanley.
Stanley.
I know Betty Halverson. She's a busybody and a gossip, but she doesn't lie. If she says she heard you threaten to kill Carson... She heard you.
I was exasperated. I resented his attitude about Stanley, and so I just... Well, don't you ever get angry?
Not often. You meet him on a park bench, and he becomes your fairy godfather. You go away with him for the weekend. He promised. You delivered. He reneged.
Do you believe that?
Do I believe it? No.
Thank you, Sheriff.
But I'm just about the only one who doesn't. To everyone else, it's open and shut.
Why don't you believe it?
Because I guess I'm not very good sheriff.
I think you're a marvel.
No, no. If I were any good, would I be up here? And besides, I don't want you to be guilty.
Oh, why? What am I to you?
I wish I could say I had a strong clue or line of investigation, but truth is, I find you attractive, and I,
Sheriff, what are you saying?
What am I saying? I'm repeating what my old man said to me. Son, one day, when you least expect it, you're going to run into a woman, and it can be under the craziest circumstances, but you're going to know then and there, straight out, that this is the woman.
Sheriff, is everybody crazy?
Probably.
Sheriff, I'm engaged.
That doesn't alter the case.
Sheriff, am I going to be accused of this murder?
Yes.
But if you think I'm innocent...
Now, you listen to me. A lot of people had motives.
Not me.
If everybody thinks we've already got the killer, then the real murderer might relax.
It doesn't sound like a foolproof plan to me.
Well, that's the best one I can come up with. I got all these people confined to the hotel. I can only keep them a couple days where I can observe them. And once they scatter, I lose them forever.
And you're going to announce that I'm the prime suspect?
Let's have some lunch.
I'm not hungry.
Well, it's noontime. You've got to be hungry.
Please, I'm too upset.
That's the sheriff. I'm Miss Lewis, Rome. What you got? Well, when in doubt, try them out and send up the steak and the lobster. Yeah, for two. With everything.
I'm not used to big lunches.
If you're going to live up here, you'll learn to appreciate them.
Who says I'm going to... Now, listen, if I'm going to be considered the prime suspect, then it'll have to be in the papers.
Yes, I guess so.
And everybody will read it.
Most likely.
But...
Yes?
Maybe he won't read about it.
Well, how are you today?
Never mind about me. Have you found anything?
How about lunch?
Frank, you're not getting anywhere, are you?
Well, these are big and important guys up here, and they're putting on the pressure to be allowed to leave. State's attorney says we can't hold them indefinitely, and so...
Yes, thanks.
The evidence against you is strictly circumstantial. I mean...
I understand.
And even if they decide to go ahead, you have every chance of being acquitted.
And for the rest of my life, people will suspect that I...
Excuse me. Yes? Who? Hold it. Stanley Prentice wants to see you.
Stanley? He read about it.
You want to see him?
What must he be thinking?
Is he in love with you?
Yes.
Well, then tell him the truth. And he won't think anything.
You don't know Stanley.
You know something? I think you don't know Stanley.
Theodora, the reports in the paper, are they true?
No.
But everyone says...
I don't care what everyone says. I'm innocent.
But the papers say the police have a strong case against you.
I want you to know I'm innocent.
Well, I had to run up here and see you. I told them at the bank that I was sick.
That was foolish. Everyone at your office knows we're engaged. They'll figure you came up here to...
Well, we have to be sensible, Theodora. I need the job for the time being. And so, when Mr. Dittmar, the president, came over to my desk with the newspaper, he wanted to know if it was the same Theodora Lewis who was my fiancée, and...
What did you tell him?
Well, he's so straight-laced and conservative and all, I had to say it was... another person by that name.
Stanley.
Oh, Theodora, I believe you, privately.
I think you better go back to New York.
Yes, I can't afford 2 days off in a row. But I came here to tell you I'm in back of you. I believe in you, dear.
Thank you, Stanley. I believe in you, too.
Goodbye, darling. I'll write to you every day.
Please do, but... don't use the bank stationery.
Goodbye.
I didn't mean to eavesdrop.
It's all right.
You feeling okay?
He was right. Mr. Carson was right about Stanley. And that's why I was so furious with him. Because he was right. Isn't that ridiculous?
Oh, excuse me again. Yes? Hold it. It's J.P. Carson's lawyer. He's just flown up here. He's asking if you know about papers that are missing from Carson's briefcase.
Yes. Tell him I've got... Hang up. Of course. That's it. The United Merchandising Options. I've got them right here. Carson wanted copies.
Then why don't you give them to his lawyer?
I will. As soon as Ferris is arrested for murder.
Ferris?
The room. Mr. Carson's room. Was it in disorder, as if someone were searching for something?
Yes, it looked that way.
Ferris killed him. Ransacked the room for these papers.
Well, how do you know?
Ferris was caught short in the stock market. Here. His agreement entered into last year. He has to deliver 100,000 shares of United Merchandising to Carson at 25. That's because he thought the stock would go down. But today is delivery day, and the stock is selling for 60. Now you know why Ferris wanted to kill Carson.
But these papers aren't enough to convict Ferris.
Suppose we see how anxious he is to get them. I know why you killed Carson.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He had you in the ringer.
You can't prove that.
Why should I? If I turn the options over to his estate, you're still in trouble. If I gave them to you, you could burn them, couldn't you?
Keep talking.
Isn't it your turn to say something?
All right, how much do you want?
$250,000.
It's too high.
To save you $4 million? Poor Mr. Carson. Pay my price, or you'll have killed him for nothing.
Don't make me kill you, too.
What good'll it do you? You won't have the option.
Oh, yes, I will. You gave yourself away. You've got them, which means they have to be in this room somewhere.
Well, Mr. Ferris, how many people are you prepared to kill? You'll have to kill me and Deputy Adams here. Deputy Hollis.
Oh, look, Sheriff, I was desperate. I had everything at stake. What could I do?
Well, right now, you'll have to go to jail. Jim, Ralph, will you escort this gentleman?
If he'd given me the options and behaved like a gentleman, he'd be alive now. He would...
Thank you, Frank. Thank you.
Do you realize this is the first murder case I ever solved? Well, it's really the first murder case we ever had. And you solved it.
Thanks for believing in me. You were the only one who believed I was innocent.
Up here, we get mostly poachers, speeders.
Frank.
Nothing serious.
Frank.
City folks get lost in the woods.
Frank.
What is it?
Kiss me, please.
And there you have it. The transformation of Theodora Lewis, who is now Mrs. Frank Harmon, and doing nicely up in the mountains of New Hampshire. And do you remember what J.P. Carson said about Theodora's engagement to Stanley? He said, "I'll break that up if it's the last thing I ever do." He had the gift of prophecy, that man. But like all prophets, he could see other people's futures, but not his own. I'll be back in a few moments.
For hundreds of years, alcoholic men and women have been scolded, denounced, beaten, lashed, pilloried, dunked, jailed, and, of course, threatened with eternal damnation. There is no evidence that any of these treatments ever resulted in a single cure. Why not? Simply because alcoholism is not a crime. It is not a moral weakness. It is an illness. An illness that can be treated successfully. What's more, alcoholism can often be prevented before it develops if we learn to recognize the early signs of drinking problems. After all these years, there ought to be better ways to treat alcoholism than punishing the alcoholic person. And of course, there are. For information or help, write Box 2345, Rockville, Maryland.
This message is a public service by this station and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
Pieces of paper. Fragile, perishable pieces of paper. This is what so much of life is all about. A piece of paper says you're wealthy. A piece of paper says you're a pauper. A piece of paper places you in a royal palace. A piece of paper puts you in a prison or a scaffold. Is your life just so many pieces of paper, too? We have pieces of paper on which we weave these fables 7 times a week. Our cast included Rosemary Murphy, Robert Dryden, Ann Petoniak, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I am here tonight, Ebenezer, to warn you that you have yet a hope of escaping my fate.
Oh, you were always a good friend, Sankey.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
That is the hope you mentioned?
It is.
I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you have no hope but to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow, when the bell tolls one.
But couldn't I take them all at once and have it over?
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third, when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate on your mantel clock.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Listerine Lozenges. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
This is KOIN Portland, the time in the Northwest, 12 midnight.
CBS News. Renewed guerrilla violence in Argentina has taken more than 50 lives. This is Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. A group of several hundred leftist guerrillas attacked two army posts and several police stations last night near Buenos Aires. We have the latest from Bob Trossel.
57 people have been reported dead, and the toll could climb as high as 70 in a guerrilla attack against an army arsenal. More than 100 guerrillas attacked the base, while other guerrilla units carried out diversionary attacks on police stations and military installations in the area. The guerrillas were apparently attempting to capture the base and steal arms. The attack was so intense that naval air support was called in before the guerrillas were driven off. There has been a great deal of damage in the area, and some kind of heavy explosives were used in the attack. It is feared that many bodies have not yet been found in the rubble. It is not clear how or if the guerrillas escaped from the area. Bob Trossel for CBS News in Buenos Aires.
The attacks came a day after a right-wing rebellion against President Isabel Perón was put down. The rebels had accused Mrs. Perón of not being able to stop political violence. More news in a minute.
The successful selling cold medicine in the world is a little capsule. It's Contact. It contains no ingredients for aches and fever, no cough medicine, yet gives you longer relief per dose than any pill, any liquid. Full-time 24-hour relief of your sneezing, drips, and congestion. Contact. Its tiny time pills contain ingredients to work up to 12 hours. That's longer relief per dose from those symptoms than any pill, any liquid. So, give your cold a Contact. All day, all night. Full time. Use only as directed.
Secretary of State Kissinger repeated his concern yesterday that the Senate has blocked funds to anti-Soviet factions in Angola. Kissinger said that the Senate move could make the Soviet Union bolder and encourage them to enter other countries' civil wars. That kind of philosophy does not sit well with Senator Dick Clark, who is one of the leaders against American aid to Angola.
If the President and the Secretary of State feel so strongly that our increased participation and that our national security is somehow at stake here, then they ought to go to the American people and to the Congress publicly and make their case. Why hide it and why fund it in a secret way? We're about to take up the military assistance bill when we return. Why not ask for money openly under that bill? Now, surely we've had enough secret wars brought about without any public knowledge or without any public support. I think the President knows very well that if he goes to the people and to the Congress publicly, that they will not support this kind of an African venture.
Senator Dick Clark. A baseball arbitration panel has decided that two major league pitchers can now operate as free agents. The decision is causing distress to baseball officials. Don Cladstrup reports from New York.
Baseball Commissioner Bowie Kuhn said he was enormously disturbed by the panel's decision, warning it could spell disaster for Major League Baseball. Kuhn's comments came after a three-man panel headed by arbitrator Peter Seitz declared pitchers Andy Messersmith and Dave McNally free agents. The decision puts a serious dent in baseball's reserve clause, which binds a player to a club for life unless he is sold or traded. Players have branded the reserve system a slave system. Club owners have argued the reserve clause is necessary to preserve balance and prevent richer organizations from buying up the best talent. Neither Messersmith, who played out his option with the Los Angeles Dodgers this year, nor McNally, who retired from the Montreal Expos, had any comment. However, the presidents of the American and National Leagues were described as being in a state of shock, and Major League owners, warning the decision could wreck baseball, said they would immediately appeal the matter to court. Don Cladstrup, CBS News, New York.
Now this message. I'm speaking to you from the 20th floor of a large hospital in my city, but which just as easily could be in your city. I've just been taken on a tour of a brand new laboratory, specially designed for advanced research, to find the answers we need in the fight against cancer. In one part of the lab, scientists test the reactions of human cells to anti-cancer drugs. Close by, there are germ-free units where cancer patients receive chemotherapy treatment. That's what makes this lab special, chemotherapy, which is the use of life-supporting drugs to control and arrest runaway cancer cells. It's just one of the research units supported by the Chemotherapy Foundation to find new drugs, new victories against cancer. Those victories will come more quickly with our support. So send your check today to the Chemotherapy Foundation. That's C-H-E-M-O Therapy Foundation, Box 8, New York, New York, 10028. This is Bess Meyerson with a public service message from the Chemotherapy Foundation. Greek authorities are looking for three gunmen who shot and killed an American embassy official last night outside Athens. Richard Welch has been identified as the chief CIA agent in Greece by an English language newspaper in Athens. According to UPI, intelligence sources in Washington confirm that story. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
For the latest in Northwest news, stay tuned to COIN at 12:30.